Hello and welcome to Null Pointers. We are your hosts, Stephen
and Mark.
And today we'll be talking .NET 9 Preview 7, data caching on your device, offline modes, all the things.
And upcoming conference.
But Mark, before we start with all that important stuff.
Yes, Stephen.
We had a quick discussion earlier today.
We did.
And it was related to popcorn.
Oh, yeah.
And you said that we were savages.
For I didn't say savages.
Not liking salt popcorn.
I did not say savages. I just, so this week, so the week that we were doing the recording, that was the .NET Day in Switzerland. And my good friend from just a bit further down the street that you live on, Gerald, was in Switzerland at a conference, and the closing keynote of that conference always has got like this tradition that you get a drink, so you can have a beer and some popcorn. And if you don't like beer, there are other drinks. So anyhow, and then he was like starting to eat the popcorn, and then he suddenly turns to me and says like, Mark, do all Swiss people eat salted popcorn? I go like, well, we also have sweet popcorn, but I guess the majority eats salty popcorn. And then he kind of made a face. He didn't say anything, but like non-verbally, you could see he was not pleased by the majority of Swiss people preferring salty popcorn. So I just made the remark that, well, you know, at least we don't put salt into our candy. So that settled that debate for that moment. And then we enjoyed again the closing keynote, which was nice. So yeah, but that was that. And then so you told me that it's not so uncommon that people in the Netherlands actually do you eat salty popcorn? So it might be just Gerald's preferation, which is totally fine by me. But yeah, then I just might have made the remark that the Netherlands was like the only place that I know that also ever served me iced tea with some carbonated water in it. Which, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I'll happily admit that that is gross. I don't like the iced tea with bubbles.
Well, I just wanted to say I think it's interesting how different countries have got different preferences when it comes to taste. I mean, I'm like half Swiss, half British, so I can totally relate that some things just are odd in some cultures, but that's just the way it is. And yeah, I think as long as you're not being force-fed the stuff, yeah, live and let live, you know. Enjoy your candy and popcorn and iced tea however you want, as long as you allow me to enjoy it. But moving from culinary preferences and all the interesting tastes that there are around the world, I mean, some countries have got rotten fish as a delicacy. I mean, you know.
Bah.
Humans are strange beings sometimes. It depends on the perspective, probably where you've grown up. But yeah, that's just that. Moving along. I mean, this is or should be a opinionated tech podcast after all. There has been, or there is currently, we're in the preview cycle of .NET. So .NET 9 will be released later this year, sometime come November, I think, if I'm not mistaken. There is a preview train right out there, and the latest update that came out was .NET 9 Preview 7, and I liked quite a few features that came along with that, and usually I'm not the one dabbling with preview editions, but this one had like one addition to it, which was right on the top. It was the hybrid web view, which I had to try out. Perhaps also because I actually gave a talk about said topic, hybrid applications, with .NET MAUI just a few days ago. So that was like a nice release. But it has been going on for quite a while. Alan Lipton, he's part of the .NET MAUI team, I think, or at least he's working very closely together with them. He has had a side project on his personal account for quite a while, the MAUI Hybrid WebView, which basically it takes the, or as I understand it, probably totally wrong, but we used to have a web view in .NET MAUI, and even before that in Xamarin, since like forever. With Blazor Maui, we got a new Webview, the Blazor Webview. And now there is yet another Webview, the hybrid Webview. And basically what it does, it allows you to more easily interact with single page applications that you want to use in your Maui application. So if you already have a web application and it has got a ton of features in it, and it just doesn't really make sense for you to rewrite all that for a mobile application, you can now, you can package said application within your mobile app, and then simply the interaction between it is becoming easier. Right now, the functionality of his personal hybrid Webview and the one that is right now in Maui, there's some differentiation, but it is still preview, so there is still some time until the final release. But you can now, basically what you can do is you can invoke JavaScript from within your C# code. So you can like access the hybrid Webview and say like, hey, here is some native information. For example, if you've got a BLE device that you have connected to your phone, you can communicate over the C# part with the BLE library and NuGet package. You can then communicate with the device, and you can then relay the said information into the hybrid application. What you can also do is from the web part, you can send information to C#. So if you have maybe some forms or something where you some settings that you want to do in the hybrid part, you could then send those things over to Donny Maui. What this allows you is to write a hybrid application. Technically, you could do this already before. So you could already do that with the Webview. It just was quite a bit clunky. And with this hybrid Webview, you get a few nice helpers that just make it easier. So if you're just getting started, it will help a ton to bring this on board. And I always know, I usually when I talk with developers, there's always a bit of controversy around this topic, because it's like smashing a web application onto a mobile app or like into a native app. It always feels a bit yucky to some people. And I totally get that point. But from a business perspective, I also totally understand why you do not want to maintain two front-end stacks that you then always have to keep in sync, so that the user's experience will not change if he's using the web or the mobile experience. And I think this just gives us yet another option to do this. And the company that I work at, we use a lot of websites in the product that we're creating. And being able to now bring those contents more easily to the phone, and also to enable more interaction between the native features of the phone and the web part, I think that's a nice treat. So I'm really looking forward to the upcoming previews that are coming along. And yeah, I'm really happy to stay tuned. Was there anything in the preview that caught your eye, Stephen?
A few bits. Like probably you, I typically just scroll down to .NET Maui and see what's new there. There's obviously way more in there than just that, but it's where my interest goes out to mostly. And there's a few small things that are, like, it doesn't seem like a lot, but it is kind of nice, actually. One of which is that you can now set the, or they changed the binding mode for the back button. So instead of it being one time, which was basically its binding mode, which means that whatever you set first for that property remains the value forever. They change it now to one way, which means that you can actually have a bit more control over how you want to view the back button at runtime. And there are some scenarios where I've been wanting to dabble a bit more with those. Like, for me, the title bar with the title and the back button and other buttons that you might put up there, it's always a bit of a hassle to work with, I feel like. Like, if you just want the out-of-the-box behaviors, it's perfectly fine. But if you do want to get a bit more custom with it, it sometimes leads to, scenarios where you previously would have to write a custom renderer for certain things. And they did abstract a lot of that out of there in recent years, but it still feels a bit icky to work with from time to time. And this is, I guess, a step into the direction of where it should go. And the other one, which is there probably is a reason for it, but they removed the main page, if you want to say it really dramatically. Like typically in your app, .cs, you would set main page equals whatever your starting page for your app would be. That's going away. It still works, mainly for conversions from Xamarin Forms to MAUI, I would imagine. But the idea is that you adopt the new pattern where you're basically overriding a method, create a window in there, and then pass that whatever page you would typically load up with, which is a new pattern. But other than that, it doesn't do much, I suppose. It still loads your app. And another thing that kind of caught my eye is that they did some, well, according to themselves, sweeping performance and stability improvements. Sweeping makes it seem like it's a whole lot. And that is for the collection and carousel view, and mostly for iOS or Mac, that kind of stuff. Which is, I mean, any improvement to collection view is welcome in my book. Let's just say it like that.
Absolutely.
Can't make much more than that out of it. Collection view, it has all of its quirks on its own, but yeah, it works.
Well, collection view is just like, it's a workhorse, right? I mean, whenever you got a list of things or an unknown quantity you want to display, it's the collection view. And in certain scenarios, it just breaks down. And I agree. Every performance improvement to collection view is great because you never know when you hit that oddball case where you suddenly find a scenario where that collection view starts to break down for you. And yeah, there have been some really cool things. I mean, when you talked about the title bar, it's just like, I think this is a new theme that we start to push always more stuff up into the title bar to gain more screen estate. I mean, I remember there used to be a time where the title bar was just a title bar, and on desktops you could still close, maximize, or minimize stuff, and that was about what the title bar could do. And now it seems like you do everything in a title bar. You search for stuff, I think it's cool. I mean, I really like the designs of it, but it's just the requirements have grown, and being cross-platform can put an additional pressure on you, especially because you then have to adopt like all these different title things that are going on. So, but it's always nice to see that these new patterns have now arrived like at .NET MAUI, and I mean like arrived, they've been there forever, because you said you could just like write a custom handler and then implement the stuff, but it's now there in the standard, so one less step for us to do. And also it seems like the journey continues towards desktop. I guess that's the reason why they changed the main page thing, or they made it obsolete, because on mobile you got like one window, and that's that. For tablets, one might argue that that's no longer true, but generally speaking, you had like one main thing and everything was running in there and you were happy. And on desktop or tablet, you now start to have like these multi-window scenarios going on. I hope we never go back to the crazy heydays of the 90s where applications had like five separate windows that you could move around and not find them anymore. But that was then. And I think, so I usually like to sometimes scroll through the general service announcements of the previews. Oftentimes I only understand half of what's actually going on. For example, like marking tensor T as experimental, I guess that means we get more AI, but yeah, you know, that's out of knowledge. I think the removal of the binary formatter, that is a bit of a controversial one. I personally have not done a lot with it,
I don't think I've used it.
Yeah. And I mean, there's always some nice, runtime optimizations where it only understands 10% of it. And it seems to be that a lot of the web world now is going towards ahead of time compilation, which always makes me smirk a bit, because as mobile developers, we have been doing ahead of time since forever, ever with .NET. But I think it's also a bit different. I mean, the Xamarin days, we were on the Mono runtime, if I'm not mistaken, and now we're like on the .NET runtime. So the cool thing is any optimization that flows into .NET, in theory, we should also get like for free in the MAUI space. Though, since if you're like really close to platform specific stuff, which ahead of time compilation usually is, I think that can sometimes still be a toughie to then adopt that everywhere, but that's just me guessing. So I must say, I'm really looking forward to the next update, the preview 8 and stuff like that. That's mainly because the hybrid review really has got my attention this time. And I'm really looking forward to which features will make it into the final release. But yeah, things to stay tuned on. And Gerald, he showed me actually a really neat trick. I did not know of that, but you can actually use this for hybrid WebView, Blazor WebView especially. And in theory, you could also use it for the WebView. And that is, if you got an application, a .NET MAUI application that presents a WebView, or let's say a Blazor WebView, because there it works out of the box. For the others, you have to do some tweaking. And if you do that, you can actually go, there's a documentation site, which we'll add to the show notes, that will show you how you can open up your default browser from the platform. So I'm on macOS, so it's Safari. And then you can go into the develop dropdown, and then you can select your device that's running, that's your app. And then you get the web developer tools for that application that's running. So if you're debugging something and you got like an odd behavior that only happens when you're on the mobile platform, and if you can't really reproduce it in the browser, if you're going like with other tools, you can now actually debug your front end view. And with the hybrid web view, since you got like a lot more code that is not running in the C# runtime, this has been so sweet to do, because you can then actually just, yeah, you can see like, oh, I got an exception. What is the exception of that? Oh, so it must be something there. And otherwise you're just like blind swearing at your computer and not knowing what the hell is going on. So that feature's been there for quite some time. But our good friend of the show, Gerald, he showed it to me, and I was blown away. It still feels like a bit of magic that you can open the developer tools off the browser for a mobile app, for an app running. Yeah, that's crazy. Crazy stuff. Yeah. Crazy cool stuff.
A whole new world out there.
Yeah. Speaking of Gerald, did you know that Gerald, former host of the Null Pointers, has finally reached YouTube celebrity state? He has now got 100k followers on YouTube. I mean, that's awesome. Congratulations, Gerald, on the air, on the recording. That's really sweet. If you don't know who Gerald is, I'm sure we'll put a link into the show notes so you can check out his YouTube channels. They are usually come with two benefits. Number one, you generally will learn something very insightful around .NET MAUI. And number two, you will always have a nice smile when you see the new picture from the video, because he usually puts quite some effort into making a fun little introduction in the image.
In front thumbnail. Of
me. Thumbnail. Thank you. Thank you. Into the thumbnail of the video.
So in the intro, we already talked about what we wanted to talk about this pod, one of which was offline data in your apps. So you have an app, it doesn't always require the internet. Maybe you're using it in a space where there is no internet. Say you're running around a factory, or you're running somewhere in a truck that is driving in a 4G, 5G, whatever G network dead zone.
Or you're just simply on vacation, have got limited data roaming, and you don't want to blow out the bank just because you want to use your app while on vacation.
Also a good use case. I thought you were going to say you're driving in a tunnel, because you Swiss have a lot of tunnels.
But we have a lot of mountains.
True. I'll give you that. So you're running your app in limited connectivity or no connectivity at all. But you still want to use your app, right? So you want to maybe provide some new data, or you want to at some point get that data into a backend. Those are just a few scenarios. What are our options? That is, I guess, the question that we're trying to answer here.
It is. I think from a technical point, which we'll get to shortly, there are a few options that you can choose from. And I think before you start adding caching blindly to your app, because you heard this on this podcast, how important it is and that you might see some scenarios bubbling up, I think it's always important to remember that you don't always have to be offline capable, or you should always be offline capable in a sense that your app does not crash when you're offline. But other than that, it can be totally feasible that you have a functionality in your app where you need a backend. So if you got like a stock broker ticker application and you cache the input from that and you then hold back the buy trade information for an indefinite amount of time until the user 2 weeks later comes back and then the purchase order goes through, that is not what we mean with this segment. What we usually will be talking about is applications where you say like, yeah, from a business perspective, we would actually really like to have an application that does not require internet continuously. If you're on vacation, there are many applications that help you while there, like with sites and stuff like that. So if you've got a map application, you can provide the feature or the functionality to download said information previously, so that when you're in an area where you have got bad reception or expensive reception, that you are not relying on the internet to get said information, but you actually have that. And the user in that case might also be fine if he does not get the latest ratings of a place because he's got a few ratings maybe that were actual at the time when he uploaded or downloaded the cache. So I think that's always a good thing to remember, because we as developers, we're technical people. So if someone goes and says like, every app should be supporting offline, we go like, okay, cool. So let's open up the bank vault and invest a gajillion into this, and we will make the best offline capable app in the world that will always run, even if the net is down for 365 days. Our app still will be there, and once it's back, it will be ready to upload all the stuff that you have been working on. That being said, we have already done a episode on caching. I think it's about 4 years old, if I'm not mistaken. So
might be.
So caching is a obvious first step, I think, when you talk about making a mobile app offline capable. Caching is not a permanent storage solution. It's an in-betweener. So it's like you cache your web requests that you do, and if the web is no longer there, you just surf it from the cache. And that is not a brilliantly new idea around the block. That has been around for quite some while. There is the problem of caching that it comes up in this famous, there are only two things that are hard in software development. One is naming, two is caching, so there goes the caching. Three is off by one errors, and then there's still async await. So, yeah, the joke is growing, I think, over time. Async await was not there from the start, but I like to add it now. Anyhow, so caching can be tricky. So it's not just like the technical thing of adding it in. I think if you think about it and you look that your backend communication goes through a single point in code, you can add caching without a lot of effort usually. But you then have to always remember, like, if you got stuff that you write to the backend and then you serve stuff from the cache, it can be very confusing to the user that the cache serves like the old state. So if you got, for example, if you got like a to-do list and you add a new to-do and then you go back to the overview and you show them the cache state, your new to-do will not be on there because it's still sent to the backend. So sometimes you got like these scenarios where you then update the local cache, and that's generally when everything gets a wee bit more complicated. But I think that's like basically caching in a nutshell. But there's also other things that we can consider, Stephen. Like we could preload information. We can put information to the asset store. And then on initial boot, we can check, hey, do we already have the information locally available. If not, we'll take it like from the asset usually is there when you install the app. So that's like the initial thing. So if the user installs the app, he forgets to ever open the app, and then he's at the place, he will still have some initial information that you have provided him at the time when you submitted the app to the store. From there on, you could like go another step further. So if you do not want to solely rely on updating your offline storage by application submissions through the store, but you might have got a back end where you can also provide information, you could then go one step further by loading the asset information, putting it into local storage. This is like a move that you have to do because you cannot write into the assets anymore. That's like frozen in time when you created the app. But you could then overwrite that local storage. So you could like say, initially I start up, I take it from my installation parts. And if I got internet, I'll update immediately whatever I had from the time that the app was installed. I think these are like patterns that work really nicely if you got this scenario where you know that the majority of usage will not be during when people actually have internet or want to use the internet. So again, roaming is something that, I mean, it was just like some vacation time. We're recording this still like at the very end of August, so some memories are still fresh. They're getting pushed out by actual work memories again, which are just as
What is this holidays you're talking about?
Yeah. What is this strange word you're using, sir? No, but anyhow, so I think there are like many scenarios that you can think through of. And yeah, for me, that's like the offline storage. Like if I'm on vacation, I suddenly notice like how many applications I'm using on a daily basis that just suck so much data from the interwebs. Like if you're like watching videos or listening to music, it's usually those two that just like, or watching images from other people, I guess, also fall into that category. Instagram. Not the creepy ones, but yeah, it's like those tend to eat up quite a bit of data. But it's also like other stuff, like when you use the map for navigation and you haven't downloaded the map information, that can usually also add a few hundred megabytes to your data plan quite quickly. And I think those are also the apps that I then use more intentionally. And yeah, so vacations has got all its good sides, different than the everyday life. I think that's the quintessence.
Quick in-between anecdote regarding that. Like a friend of mine was on a boat trip during his vacation. Somehow, through events, his phone dropped somewhere with all the pictures from the trip on it that weren't synced yet to iCloud because there was no internet in the boat's situation. So yeah, they had to dive up the phone and they got back to port, synced all the pictures. And after that, he was like, the phone can die now. It's fine.
It's fine. I got my memory.
All the things are saved. Yeah. Good stuff.
It's like that moment in I only have that during vacation. Like when I'm in Switzerland, I got an unlimited data plan. So you don't even think about these things. But like on vacation, you suddenly notice like, people charge incredible amounts of money so you can use their not so really good running Wi-Fi. And how you can suddenly see like people gathering around a building where the Wi-Fi hotspot is, and not talking to each other, just like staring at their phones and doing stuff. It's I don't know if that is hilarious or if that is a bit sad. Still judgment is in my head.
I have to admit here that our Wi-Fi our last holiday wasn't great, and it was kind of sad how dependent you've become from that, I guess. Like it's just two people, me and the wife, because the kids were asleep, so we wanted to just mess around on our phones or read something there that was stored online, you know. It's horrible. But yeah, we managed. And some offline time is good as well.
Yeah, I must say, like the one thing I did not miss was not receiving a lot of notifications. So we were a bit up north in Sweden, and so the cell recovery was not good anyway. So I often just like deactivated data and or had it in airplane mode because I had all the information actually stored locally. And then during the evening, I sometimes went online, and I think I expired like regularly the time window when you get notifications still in. So they like often expired on the server end. And I did not miss that. And so I thought I might try to do that while again in normal life. And people did not like me for that. The understanding, if you're on vacation, is there. But in daily life, if you do not respond within a given set time, you are in trouble, it appears. So yeah. Back to the good old dinging on a regular basis. And I'm talking not, I know you can deactivate notifications. It's just like the regular stuff, you know, like your Messenger, where you also have got friends and family in there that you actually want to reply within time, and calendar invites, which I live by my calendar on the phone. I can no longer keep it in my head since years. So yeah, it's just those little things that go dinging on and on and on and on. And you can also send notifications before someone shortly goes on stage, I've heard. But that's a topic for another time.
I feel like there's some pain here, but yeah. So back to our circling back to our original offline scenarios. You mentioned caching. Obviously, I think in that episode, the things we discussed are still probably fairly relevant, like the local databases with SQLite. We probably talked about Akavash or something similar that already does a lot of the heavy lifting so that you don't have to implement that yourself. Are there tools, I'm pretty sure there are, that actually handle all of the, like having the data locally, that's one thing, right? The other thing is getting that data back into a backend and preferably managing state around that, because maybe somebody changed it in the meantime. Is your change leading? Is the change the other person did leading? Like all those scenarios, that's where it gets really complicated, I guess. And what I remember from implementing this in the past, there is something in Azure for this as well. I mean, there's something for everything in Azure at this point. But I believe Azure Mobile Apps, I think it was called. Is that still a thing? No, it's not. I think that might be something from that episode a few years ago that is no longer relevant. Because I think that was killed off, if I'm not mistaken.
The site is still active, but it tends to... So I remember like the mobile offering of Microsoft, it tended to move around and change a bit. So... Yeah, I've never worked personally with that service that you mentioned, and it's always very business specific. So what I mean by that is it always depends a bit on your scenario that you are trying to cover with your sync action. I remember like the easiest solution is like last write wins, so timestamp wise you could do it. So that would be a bit more intelligence, like if you actually track when the change was made. You could like say if the user makes a change on his phone and then he goes to a computer and he makes the same change and maybe even some more at a later time and the phone syncs up, it will be thrown away, that change, because it's older than the one that's last on the database. But you need to do some additional logic with that. Yeah, I think those are like a problem scenario where you can generally invest a lot of time and potentially waste time. So I always like to keep my synchronization scenarios as simple as I possibly can, because you can go crazy if you think through those scenarios, right? I mean, you could like then start to develop your own like synchronization logic, like when this is, then that has to win, or in that case, this and that. And if there's still a conflict, then we will push out notifications to the users and they can do blah, 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 and whatever. And sometimes it's just like, yeah, last write wins, and we send out a notification to everybody that was involved in the document that person just made a change. So at least you know who to blame, like Stephen usually, Mr. Blame. But no, usually you know then who to talk with if a change was made that does not coincide with your change, or you can make some historization, stuff like that. But generally speaking, solving conflicts is a toughie in my experience. But another thing that it comes to mind is when you spoke before about your said friend who kind of managed to dunk his phone into the ocean, as it sounds. Sure was a nice diving experience to find it. I hope you also saw some other life down there. Anyhow, transferring photographs, what you don't want to do is always have your application open the entire time while it's uploading. So I know that there are some libraries that can help you there. Or generally speaking, there is the functionality in platforms that you can have a background upload, so you can like queue stuff so it uploads. From time to time, it has to be kicked off again. My memory is a few years old there, but if you look at Apple, you had like a maximum amount of uploads that you could queue for that. But that would then happen in the background. And if you're having a lot of files, or if you like want to do that, that's surely something to look into. So one library that comes to mind is the Shiny.net library, which has got the feature of the HTTP transfers. And that basically goes into the same thing that I just touched upon, where you can then queue files for the upload. Though I think at the moment it only supports iOS and UWP. So Android is not supported, which is a bit of a shame. You can also, if you look at it, you could probably create a custom handler or your own library to do that. I have been in projects where we implemented this, but it's just like if you work with big files and you come back from a long offline scenario, the synchronization, it is key that you do it. And the other thing, though, just like to mention it, whenever you do something in the background, your users might be confused when something does not go to according to plan. Like the error handling is something that generally gets a bit more complex once you start pushing things into the offline mode. Like if you force the user to open his app so the synchronization happens, and you can do your synchronizations within a reasonable amount of time, so a few seconds usually, I think it's okay to do that like in the foreground. If it takes minutes or even hours to synchronize your content, usually I would opt in or provide an option that it happens in the background, but you will then still somehow have to show the user like your resume, hey, something has gone wrong. If you're using any cloud storage, you might have seen this. I sometimes get the information from my OneDrive that, hey, this file, it exploded in our face when we want to do it. We could not synchronize it. So now we got two versions of it. Have fun synchronizing it on your own. I mean, that is an option. I got that so long ago the last time, so maybe it improved by now. But it's just like when you do things in the background, things can go wrong. Be sure to let the user know that something has gone wrong, and preferably give them the option of taking action and not just go like, well, so there was a problem. All your data that you have collected over the last few days is now gone. Have a nice day. Yeah.
That's typically a good scenario. So in that space of things that might be helpful, I don't know if you know this, but there is actually a community toolkit around this. In the whole space of community toolkits, we typically know of the MAUI one. The MVVM one is also a really popular one. There is a DataSync community toolkit under that same community toolkit umbrella. I must also admit, I have never used it. But it exists. I've never used it, so I don't know the state of it. I think it's relatively newer compared to the MVVM and the MAUI ones. But there is something there and people are working on it. So it might be something worth checking out at the very least. So we will put a link to that in the show notes as well.
Oh, this looks cool. I have not known of this, but I will have to check it out. I won't do this while mumbling along on a podcast, so I'll leave the mumbling for later. But yeah, it I think it just shows like new library still a relevant problem, still not solved perfect for everyone. So that's one thing. One addition I can still add that I'm pretty sure is not in the last podcast we did is there is actually in the .NET framework, there is an in-memory cache, which is quite neat. We use it in one of our products to cache. We do it there for performance reasons. So usually in the mobile case, we use caching for being offline, but caches can also speed stuff up significantly. So if you got something that takes a long time to compute, you can just store that result for an intermediate time. And if you hit up on that cache before it expires, you will get the information a lot quicker. So there's also that when you use caches, which is generally quite nice. And this in-memory cache, there is like a option that you can use a sliding window. And what that means is the expiration date will always be postponed as long as you hit the cache before it expires. So if you say, I want to have it expire within 10 minutes, and at minute 9 you access the cache, it will then be, again, valid for another 10 minutes, which I think is really nice. It only works in memory, so that means like as long as your app is actually running. But in certain scenarios, that could actually really be enough because you could, yeah, so if you ensure that what you have in memory is also serialized once the app shuts off, you could, in theory, have an interesting caching solution, not be dependent on third-party apps. I must be honest, I mainly use this in-memory framework on the back end, but I did not know of it, and I was quite pleasantly surprised that it was there. You can also put limitations on size, so that is not grow indefinitely because it's in-memory. So if you run out of memory with an in-memory cache, it's usually not good for your app. Usually will end in a hello home screen scenario. So yeah, but it's a neato.
And I think with that, we covered a few bases of attack or points of attack for handling offline and caching and that kind of stuff. And more importantly, we settled the debate that salt popcorn is shite.
That means it's great, right?
We've been your hosts, Stephen.
And Mark.
If you like our content, follow us on all the podcast stuff. Hit that bell, ding that notification, whatever platform you're using and features that it has. Have a good one, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Let's go next time. Let's go.